Call Back the Past.
And father set to work in a miserable hut at the back of the School of Physics in Paris, which was all they had for a laboratory. It had an earthen floor and a leaky roof, and Pierre Curie shivered with cold as he bent over his instrument. Outside, in the yard, Marie Curie, then in her early 30s, could be seen toiling like a laborer, stirring a boiling cauldron of pitch blend until she was broken with fatigue. They were very poor. They had to beg and scrape to buy pitch blend from the mines in Bohemia. But at last, after 4 years, from a ton of pitch blend, they isolated 1 decigram of radium, but only about 300th part of an ounce. But it was the first radium in the world.
Yves Curie tells of her parents, Pierre and Marie, who received the Nobel Prize for their work in 1903. It was in 1903 that Henry Ford left the Detroit Motor Company to go it alone. The year saw the establishment of the Krupp Works at Essen in Germany, and the first direct wireless communication between Europe and America, as the United States President Theodore Roosevelt inaugurated this new medium of communication with a message to Britain's King Edward VII. It was in 1903 as well that the first recording of an opera was made, Verdi's Ernani. And a future musical giant, Sir John Barbarolli, was just 4 years old, but with definite ambitions to be the great conductor he was indeed to become.
This conducting business, curiously enough, started when I was a very small boy, about the age of 4. My father and grandfather shared the first desk of violins at the old Empire Theatre in Leicester Square, and my father used to take me to the rehearsals. I used to sit in the stalls fascinated, and I used to be particularly fascinated by the conductor, who used to, in those days, always have white gloves on. I used to go home and shut myself up, lock the door in the room. I didn't want anybody to see me, and I used to sit on a little stool and sing tunes and steal a pair of white gloves of my sisters or my mother and imagine I was the conductor at the Empire.
George Bernard Shaw wrote his famous play Man and Superman in 1903, and J.M. Barrie his play about the manservant who became a master, the admirable Crichton. From Scandinavia came August Strindberg's play, Queen Christina, and from America, the strains of Sweet Adeline.
Sweet Adeline, my Adeline, at night, dear.
The Great Train Robbery, the longest film yet, lasting all of 12 minutes. On the musical stage, The Wizard of Oz, Whoop-de-Doo, and Babes in Toyland. It was the era of the music hall and the stage door Johnny. Ruby Millar tells of this phenomenon at George Edwards Gaiety Theatre in 1903.
There were the younger sons, the stage door Johnnies and the Mashers. They filled the stage door of the Gaiety. They were very well off, just men about town, wearing those lovely satin-lined opera cloaks. They gave us endless gifts, absolutely fabulous, all the time. On one occasion, one young man sent me a bouquet of orchids, and a £5 note was wound round every stem. Chap took one look at it and said, "I'm sorry, my lord. Mr. Edwards does not allow his ladies to receive money," and returned the bouquet. The next night, from the same young man, I received a beautiful diamond and emerald bracelet. That was allowed. Edward said, "You may accept flowers, sweets, gloves, stockings, jewels, houses, cars, yachts, horses, but never money."
While the Irish poet W.B. Yeats toured America, these were the books of 1903. Jack London's The Call of the Wild, The Ambassadors by Henry James, and the posthumous publication of Samuel Butler's The Way of All Flesh. At the music hall, there was Tom Costello.
I don't mean to waste another day. I'll find that somewhere in our colonies I mean to try. Yes, I'll try. Do or die, for a time I should say that I'll come back someday and I may be a millionaire. I may go from the land that I love, my heart I leave behind.
South Africa was one of the colonies in 1903, and it was visited in the wake of the Anglo-Boer War by Britain's Joseph Chamberlain. He convinced himself of the fact that Lord Alfred Milner's policy of British supremacy in South Africa was wrong, and that a line of conciliation should be pursued. It was in 1903 that the famous South African game ranger, Harry Wolliter, was involved in a horrific experience with a lion while out riding near Lenanda in the Transvaal.
So I pulled my horse around quick and stuck the spurs into him and started on the backward trail on the footpath. But before the horse could get up speed, the one lion jumped onto his hindquarters and knocked me out of the saddle. The other lion was in the act of running around to get the horse by the head. And I fell off right in front of this lion. Fortunately, I fell very close to him, almost on top of him. So all he had to do was to catch hold of me by the shoulder and dragged me away. But as he was dragging me away, it struck me about my sheath knife. And I thought, now, where shall I stab him? So I fell to his shoulder, and I knew where the heart was, and I struck him twice quickly behind the shoulder, in the heart.
The murders of Serbia's King Alexander and Queen Draga made world headlines in 1903. A year which saw the invention of the electrocardiograph by Wilhelm Einthoven and the discovery of phenobarbital, a long-acting sedative.
Cider, sweet as apple cider, sweeter than all I know. Come out, near the silvery moonlight, of love I'll whisper, so soft and low. Seems though can't live without you. Listen, my honeydew, doodly-doo. Ida, kinda Ida lie here. I long to love you, Ida, deed, I do.
Ida, sweet as apple cider, hit song of 1903.
A clever young lady, charming.
Marie Lloyd, Queen of the British Music Hall. Whether she ever joined Emmeline Pankhurst's National Women's Social and Political Union, formed in 1903, we shall never know. However, many did join, including Miss Daisy Solomon, who later came to South Africa and recalled how the ladies were treated in prison after their arrest for disturbing the peace in their quest of voting rights for women.
We were just ordinary prisoners. I don't think we had any concessions, except that we decided we wouldn't keep the rule of silence. And as there were 29 of us when I was there, it was a deputation and 29 were arrested, they couldn't very well do anything. We just said we weren't going to keep silent. So when we did what was called associated labor, we talked to each other. Although we were put far apart, we did just whisper to each other. Because, you know, it was rather intolerable to never say a word to anybody but to the wardress. And then it was only to know whether we were all right, things like that. To say yes or no. We had to put on prison clothes, just like the ordinary prisoner.
Back the Past was devised and presented by Percy Seath and comes to you by courtesy of the Springbok Radio Preservation Society of South Africa.